I remember the excitement, hurrying forward, little steps at a time, not knowing when my playground friend would turn around. Then, the light was green, but at any moment, he could turn on me and throw me out of the game. This time, I pushed it just a bit too far. When he finally turned around, yelling, "Red light," I was still moving from the momentum. I was done. Tagged. I'm out. But that one particular game, my mom was watching, and she was furious. "Richard!" she yelled. "Richard, what are you doing?" "Playing," I responded. My mother lumbered forward and grabbed my arm, almost lifting me off the ground. "What are you doing?" she repeated. "You're out, Richard. He got you." The way she said it opened a pit in my stomach. I'm blinking. She was on the breaking point. "Please, Richard, please. You must take this seriously. Can you do that for me?" "Okay," I nodded. She held me close, ruffled my hair, and kissed my forehead. As she stepped back, her smile faded. "Again," she said, taking a deep breath. "Try to do better." For years on end, that was my spare time. While other kids played basketball or soccer, I played red light, green light. Sometimes, I would start out of nowhere. Mom would turn to me suddenly, making a scary face, and yell, "Red light!" If I reacted, she'd send me to my room or take away my toys. It was as if the game never really ended. In the checkout line at the supermarket, at the movies, during dinner, all the time. It was so common that it didn't even sound like words anymore. Green light and red light were just these barking noises that made me stand at attention. That's why I write it as red light, without the spaces. It just doesn't sound like words to me. Dad participated sometimes, but he was never as enthusiastic. If anything, it annoyed him. He thought it was stressful, and it always put him in this strange mood. I remember once, when we were driving through Missouri, when my mom started going red light, I just sat up straight, staring ahead like a statue. I learned not to blink, not to breathe, not an inch. If there was ever a championship in this game, I'd be a world-class contender. But Dad just pulled over and stopped the car. He covered his face and his hands and just cried. I'd never seen anything like it before. "Please, can we just one day, please, honey, I beg you," he cried. "We have to be prepared," she sighed. "You know that. You think it matters if it ever comes to that? We have to try. He has to try. Just not now, honey, please." Mom leaned back in her seat with a sigh. She looked at me through the rearview mirror and noticed I was still holding my breath. "Green light," she smiled. "You're gonna do great, Richard." I hope this doesn't make it seem like they were bad parents. They really weren't. They were kind, caring, and worked themselves to the bone so I could have the comforts I wished for. I was their only kid, and they did their best. The only weird thing was their obsession with that one game, and I just couldn't understand it. Not a single day would go by without my mom trying to get me with a sudden red light. But as time passed, we played it less and less. As I grew into a teenager, I often refused to play along. I'd be out of the house for long periods of time, sometimes spending an entire day or two with my friends. Still, As soon as I was in the same room with my mom, I knew she'd go red light at any moment. It wasn't even a source of tension, it was just something. And sure, I could resist and be mean, but that would just cause trouble. In the end, it was easier to just play along for a few seconds. The red light would always turn green again, after all. It was just strange, and I marked them both behind their backs. Still, it turned into a pretty neat party trick. When my buddies learned that they could make me freeze up by shouting red light, it became sort of a thing. It even became my internet nickname, Red Light. So, it wasn't all bad. The year I went to college, my parents died in a car accident, a 5-car pileup, and there was no way for EMTs to get to them in time. I don't want to go into detail, but there was a fire. It wasn't peaceful. I dropped out of college, first semester. The inheritance, along with their life insurance, was substantial. Everyone was telling me to sell the house and start over somewhere new, but I just couldn't process it. If it hadn't been for my aunt, I don't know what I would have done. She arranged a funeral, she helped me move, and she called me every day to check in on me. She's a saint. That's how I ended up in this Minnesota town, in the middle of nowhere. I got a cheap house and a job at the local warehouse, courtesy of my aunt's husband. I didn't mind living in a small community that suited me just fine. I lived there for a few years. Once things calmed down and I got into a comfortable routine, I thought about going back to my studies. I didn't mind my job at the warehouse, but I always wanted to work with electronics. I thought about taking a class at the local community college, but I was terribly shy. Still, my aunt pushed me to try it at least once, so I did. I went to an evening class in basic electronics. There were 8 other students, and we got to try out shortening a cable. We opened it, cut the copper, put it back together, and the teacher made sure it all worked. It was basic stuff, and we got a thorough explanation as we went along, but it felt great making something with my hands. At the end of class, I stayed a while to talk to my classmates, Jonah, an unemployed man my own age, Paula, a young woman that wanted to apply for an apprenticeship with a local electrician, 2 men, Bill and Gary, who worked at the community theater. I ended up in the middle of a lengthy conversation. Just small scale stuff, smiled Bill, adding little lights to backdrops, that kind of thing. I just need an excuse to get out of the apartment every now and then, laughed Jonah. Feels good to keep busy, you know. What about you, Richard? Asked Paula. What are you hoping to get out of this? I hesitated. My eyes shifted from one person to the next, and there was something off about them. It took me a few heartbeats to realize they weren't moving. They were completely, absolutely still. Not a breath, not a single blinking eye. They looked like statues. My instincts kicked in. Red light. Richard, are you okay? I felt Paula's hand on my shoulder. I realized I'd been holding my breath. I had no idea how long I'd zoned out, so I just shook my head and smiled. Sorry, I chuckled. It's been a long day. Anyone, up for a coffee? They were. They all were. Later that night, as I got back home, my pulse was hammering. I didn't even know why, but that moment, at the community college, just sent a shock through me that just wouldn't die down. I hadn't thought about that game for a long time, and I hadn't played it for years. Still, it was such a primitive, instinctive reaction. As I laid down to sleep, I could audibly count my heartbeats. I could see them in my fingers as they curled slightly with every thump. I slept on top of the covers at night. It was the only way to keep cool. The next time I went to class, I was on edge. I couldn't help but feel that I'd get that strange sensation again. That feeling of the world stopping around me. This time, we were dismantling an old TV. It was a group effort, and we all got an individual assignment. We were to individually identify certain parts. Then, as a group, using the manual, we were to roughly describe the way electricity moved through the device. Gary was in the middle of presenting our work to the teacher when I got this sudden sore feeling in my throat, like the aftertaste of a bad drink. As Gary was explaining the high voltage connector, he suddenly froze. Red light. My classmates were quiet and frozen like statues, and I could see the classroom clock hold still. But just outside, in the hall, there were clear footsteps. They were uneven, one foot stepping, another foot dragging. I could hear the footsteps clear as day, but there was something else. There was a small, frosted glass window in the classroom door. I could see something moving in the corner of my eye. I tried not to move, not even to look, but curiosity was getting the better of me. Still, staring straight ahead, I was aware of the movement at the edge of my vision. There was a distinct crinkling noise, like something clutching a paper bag. The door opened slightly. Please, someone. There has to be someone. The voice was muffled. It was strange and hollow, with drawn out vocals. You have to wake me. Wake me, please. The door opened wide, just outside my field of vision, but I held my ground. I didn't move. Red light. Suddenly, Gary was talking. It wouldn't work until you're connected, he said, pointing at the flyback transformer. And it wasn't connected when we opened it, so someone's been tampering with it. Well, looks like we have a proper repairman, our teacher laughed. Well done, everyone. Messing with the heatsink too, nodded Will. Do we get extra credit for that? I just strained my back and stared at the door. It was slightly ajar. Had it always been like that? I was beginning to feel like I was having some sort of episode. It was such an absurd sensation. I got this sour feeling in my stomach, and it just didn't go away. My pulse kept pounding for hours afterwards. Again, I could barely get any sleep. If anything, it was starting to affect my day job. I was drowsy and inattentive, and died continuously to skip lunch for a nap. Once, as I was getting back to work after a lunch break, I got that awful feeling again. The lunchroom clock had stopped, and I immediately dropped everything I was doing. It took me a few seconds to remember that the lunchroom clock hadn't worked for weeks, and that everyone was just too lazy to change the batteries. I was both relieved and deeply troubled. I was considering skipping the classes altogether. I didn't want to feel that way again, and it didn't seem to happen anywhere else. But I couldn't let this stop me. Not only did I need to know more, but I also refused to let this madness get the best of me. The third time I went to class, I was a few minutes early. I found myself chatting with Jonah, Paula, Will, and Gary again. Paula was unusually quiet, and I noticed dark rings under her eyes. She seemed exhausted, almost nodding off as we sat down to talk. I could hear the classroom clock tick away. It was a calming noise. "You okay, Paula?" I asked. "Late night?" "No, I'm fine. It's just..." She sighed as she was about to answer. I heard the clock stop. "Red light." This time, the footsteps were coming straight for us. One foot stomping, one foot dragging. As the classroom door slammed open, my eyes were perfectly still. I stared into Paula's eyes, trying not to think about blinking. Something was inside the room, agitated. "Please, they have to be here. They have to wake me," I heard. The voice was clearer, a woman pleading. Then Paula blinked. Everything else was just frozen, but Paula blinked. She was doing the same thing as I was. She was going red light. "There," I heard. "There, she's there. Wake me, wake me." Paula was panicking. She slightly turned her head to the right, like a gazelle, ready to burst into a sprint. I heard a paper bag hit the floor as something big lumbered into view. Over the course of a heartbeat, something picked up Paula by neck and carried her off. In one quick swoop, I could hear her struggling to breathe, hands hitting something dry with next to no force. "Yes, take her," the voice continued from the paper bag. "Let me wake up, please." I just kept looking ahead, my eyes tearing up. Paula was screaming, and her scream was changing. It was as if something was pulling her by neck. As I heard her panicked scream shift up and down in pitch. I've never heard a scream like that. It wasn't human. It was a wounded animal, desperate to live. I heard breaking bones and a snapping sinew. Paula was silent. There was a thump as something dropped into a paper bag, spattered of liquid hitting the floor. "Yes, yes, finally." And then the clock ticked. There was no Paula at the table, no blood on the floor, no paper bags. I asked about her, but no one seemed to know what I was talking about. "Paula? What Paula?" Enough was enough. I almost stumbled over a chair as I sprinted out. I couldn't take it. I ran along the hallway, out the back door, through the patch of blue sunflowers raised by the garden club. I knocked over a few bicycles as I jumped a fence to reach my car. I fumbled with my keys, got into the driver's seat, and was out on the road before I even put on my seatbelt. I'd had enough. I wasn't taking any chances. I was leaving this whole town behind. I took the main street, then a shortcut down by Frog Lake, went through the tunnel out by the lumber mills, and slid out onto the freeway without slowing down. I'd broken a dozen traffic rules already, and I didn't care. The radio was playing the latest pop star sensation, telling me to be myself, but at that moment, I'd have asked whatever God may be to make me someone else. This had to be it. This had to be why Mom taught me to go red light. Something in me, in us, allowed us to see and be seen by something we shouldn't. Something made us aware. We were being taught how to hide. Suddenly, the radio stopped. There, on the freeway, I went still. Red light. The car was standing still. The engine was silent. I could see rays of light shining down from the streetlights. My instincts kicked in, and I just stared ahead. There was something in the passenger seat. something with a paper bag resting in its lap. I could hear Paula's voice, muffled. I think this is him, she wheezed. I think he sees. He can wake me from this nightmare. This isn't real. It didn't happen. I'm okay. A finger snapped next to my ear. Mom had done it a million times, so I didn't flinch. Instead, I just sat there, sticking to what I'd learned. My lungs ached. Please, just take him, Justin, in case. Then I'll wake up. This'll be over. There was a rustling noise, a head shaking from side to side. Please, someone must wake me. Someone must, surely. My passenger leaned in next to my ear, keeping the paper bag in their lap. They spoke, a strange, dark voice, spoken from dry lips. Hello? My chest ached, my eyes watered, but I stayed still, and I kept imagining that red light in my mind. In those painful heartbeats, I could imagine my mother turning back around with a smile as the light turned green. It would happen if I just kept it still. It would happen. I'd be fine. Suddenly, the radio came back on. The engine was roaring, and I was going 75 miles an hour. I was losing control, sliding back and forth. I took my foot off the gas, kept heading straight, and gradually slowed down. After a few seconds, I was standing still by the side of the road, dry heaving. That could have gone bad, real bad, 5-car pile-up bad. Needless to say, I have since moved out of town. I think whatever is haunting there is looking for people like me, those who are aware, those we can see. I think I get it. I'm still trying to put all the pieces together, but I'm starting to get a picture. I don't get what happened to Paula. It's like she never existed. No online presence, no car, no apartment, nothing. She's just gone. How does the world just forget about someone? Look, all I'm saying is, if you've been taught this game with the same intensity as I have, maybe it is for a reason. Just be ready, in case you're aware.